This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. United Healthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
And Ciso. Oh, it's fabulous! A strike to get you up on your feet!
Hello, welcome to Seagull Social Season 4, Episode 11. And once again, it's a podcast without Ben or Maz or me in one pod. It seems to happen every single week at this point. So this time we've got neither of them. it's all right, we've got a couple of last minute replacements again. And thank you boys for coming on, Adam and Louis. Adam, mate, you're at the game. I saw you two rows behind me, but you didn't see me. I felt like a fanboy looking behind me about 11 times before. You would not even notice me. But,
Sorry, mate.
No, it's funny. How are you after what I think was a more positive second half anyway yesterday?
Yeah, I mean, I think it was a decent game. I mean, nice for me, I only have to nip down the road. I'm living in Manchester at the moment, so it's lovely for me. So I was able to be home very quickly after the full-time whistle. But yeah, it's one of those games. Like, it was always going to be tough. I think no Brighton fan went in with the genuine belief we were going to win. So to go and, like, in the end, kind of put up a decent fight in the second half, you know, not a bad day, to be honest.
Yeah, and Louis, mate, yourself. I mean, it's only your second time on the pod, isn't it? But talking about the field,
yeah, it is, yeah.
Not ideal, but... Yeah, your thoughts yesterday, and how are you doing, mate?
Yeah, no, I'm not doing too bad. I managed to catch pretty much the whole game, actually. I was down watching my local club playing, and then we kicked off just afterwards. First half was pretty pedestrian, didn't look like we had much of a shout, and then, yeah, second half we really climbed back into it, and it could have been a draw, like you said, but yeah.
Yeah, I mean, first half, I mean, we need to talk about the obvious, I think. But it's one of them where you see the team sheet, you see no fullback, and then you see Doku and you see et cetera on that team. It was an instant worry, I think. To put it really lightly, it was an instant worry. Doku was as good as everyone thought he was, and Foden as well. I think Foden can do things with a football that no one else in England can. And I'm including Bellingham in that because he's very different to Bellingham, obviously. But I think that Foden's skill set is just ridiculous. And we saw it yesterday. He seems to really turn it on against us. And him and Doku were just causing us absolute headaches. But I don't want to call him out because I felt really bad for him yesterday because you could just see it was not his day at all. And at the end of the day, he's a 37-year-old midfielder being put into right back. He doesn't want to be there. But yeah, James Milner got absolutely rinsed by Doku. And I mean rinsed by Doku big time. Completely the whole game plan from the get-go, really. Adam, your thoughts on not just Milner, but that right side was just so invisible, wasn't it, against Doku in that first 40 minutes?
Yeah, completely. And like, it was so obvious from literally the second the game started. Like, that was their tactic, getting the ball out to the wing. You know, Doku, I think Foden on the other side, staying really wide, trying to spread Brighton out. And it was just a nightmare for particularly Milner. Like, the ball would get knocked out to him and then it'd be a dinger and Milner kind of trying to double up. But neither of them really getting that close to him because obviously they didn't really want to get skinned by him. So it sort of like would be dropping off. And then he just... You know, to be honest, I hadn't seen loads of Doku, but what a player. Like, he was absolutely electric. And you think, I mean, actually for that first goal, I was watching it back this morning just to try and kind of jog my memory a little bit. And actually it wasn't actually Milner who got skinned for that. It was actually Gross. And then kind of Milner made a bit of an error when kind of Doku got through, but he was just skinning everyone down City's left-hand side. felt bad for Milner. And to be honest, I think Veltman played pretty well when he came on, kind of shored things up and kind of grew back into the game a little bit. But yeah, horrible afternoon for James Milner, horrible.
Yeah, it's been an ongoing debate. I mean, I don't know about you, Louis, but Veltman, why? I don't understand why. Maybe he's resting him for Ajax, but he hasn't been on internationals unless I've completely missed something. And he's not really played completely consistency anyway. Why on earth is Gerald Veltman not starting him right back there? I don't think I can hear you. Can you hear him?
I hear you.
Am I muted? Yeah, is that what was going on?
I think you were muted, Louis.
Right.
That was like, that was
sorry.
Me. I don't feel
right.
Like
right. I'll start from the top again. Yeah. So.
Yeah. Go.
Yeah. No. So I think there was probably two things. I think it comes down to with picking Veltman. I think it firstly comes down to whoever he's up against, like the personnel. Like the way he dealt with Zaha last year. That was exceptional. And, you know, the way he deals with tricky wingers, the ones who try and take you on one-on-one, he's absolutely unbelievable at that. But you'll find that when people try and work around him, like play passes around him, he's a bit slower to turn, I think, possibly. Where, you know, someone like Lamptey would be a little bit more effective, I suppose. And secondly, I think it's just maybe making sure that everyone stays fit. To me, he feels like more of a... He's certainly not a wing-back, like we saw under Potter. It just doesn't work. He's more of a defensive-minded right-back. So I think when you have Estupiñán, for example, who loves to push on much, much further, and you'll even find that with Solly. You know, it's a real shame that he got injured yesterday. But when we've got that attacking shape, you know, Veltman will tuck in and it will allow whoever's on the left to just carry on forwards. So I think, again, it's that idea of the personnel that makes you think, you know, Veltman would be the one to start in this game. But I still think he's probably the best right back, like overall, you know, in terms of every bit of the skill set, I think he's probably the best that we have.
Yeah, no, it's a good analysis. I think I agree with you on the most part. I think for me, when you look at Doku yesterday, running rings around here, whoever was in front of him, of course it was as well Gross, as you say, but it just felt like we were so weak on that right side from the beginning. And obviously now we can need to talk about the left side in the second half, because obviously with Solly we'll get on to that, because we do have a bit of a fullbacks crisis at the moment, don't we? I don't want to be completely negative, because I actually thought we were really good in that second half yesterday, but I need to get these negative talking points out of the way. And that is, yeah, the right back situation is a bit worrying, left back situation is a bit worrying. Adam, do you not worry as such, but we do only play in a few days' time against Ajax. In most fans' opinion, this is a must-win game to keep our European dreams alive. And when you look at the fullback situation, it's not ideal, is it?
No, completely not at all. And I think, to be honest, I saw Andy Naylor write an article in midweek about how Brighton actually never needed a left back and what were they worrying about. But I actually really disagree with that. And, you know, I think it was something we spoke about before the transfer window closed, Ryan. I was saying I just really would love to get a left back in, because I just think it's so important. I think we're now going into a few games where we're probably going to see Veltman and Milner playing at fullback, maybe like Igor at left back, but that doesn't seem completely natural. Yeah. So I don't know. I think I find it interesting as well that kind of as soon as the season started, De Zerbi was keen to play Milner at right back for the first kind of few games. I remember seeing that quite a lot. Veltman wasn't really playing many games, and then kind of that Man United game came along. I think he came in at right back, Lamptey at left back. So I don't know. I think that there's obviously loads of changes to be made, and not helped by the fact that we've got now kind of three technically kind of fullbacks out injured. And a quality player like Estupiñán as well. Going into Thursday, it's going to be really kind of makeshift, I think, that back line, which doesn't really help, as you say, not at all.
No, yeah, it's not even just so much makeshift, is it? It's the fact that we haven't got anybody at all available to bring on even.
Yeah.
So even if that makeshift doesn't work, it's, you know, it has to. So I think that's the, as you say, the trouble of not signing someone in the summer. Obviously, we'll have Estupiñán back in a couple of weeks, which isn't so bad. But yeah, the Solly thing is a bit worrying. We'll get onto his injury a bit later on. But we'll just talk about the end of that first half, because I feel like Once we went two down, as we said, Doku was getting so much space, and that's how the first goal came about. Obviously, it's how the second goal came about again. We actually, no, it wasn't. I think it was Belaba gave it away in the end. Actually, wasn't it? It wasn't any of them, anything to do with Milner. That's very wrong. But yeah, I think it was Belaba gave it away again. It was such a minor mistake, and this is what we'll get onto, because I feel like the goals that we actually conceded were so minor in the face of the game. I thought we actually they came at a time where we were actually playing quite well. And then it's a little sort of bounce off his knee, isn't it, from Belaba. And if you're going to give it to Erling Haaland, just don't do it there. I mean, it's really just the worst place to give something to someone who is so good and probably should be winning the Ballon d'Or.
Yeah.
I said it. And he finishes it very, very well. Is there a bit of a suspect there, Louis, on Jason Steele? Not so much for the second, but the first as well. There's a couple of little bits and pieces where people may be saying, now, do we just let Verbruggen start? Or, you know, is it okay with rotating to Steele?
Well, I think, like, we've seen that De Zerbi has made a very big point of trying to keep everyone, like, rotated with the goalkeepers. And it seems to be a thing that Steele plays away, and then you've got Verbruggen at home. I'm not quite sure why. It doesn't quite clock with me, but I think it's pretty obvious to see that Verbruggen is the better keeper, and he should be the one that is starting the majority of games. I think for that second goal, to be beaten at your near post from near 25 yards like that, it's a little bit suspect. Like, obviously Dunk's doing what he can to cover and block the shot, but, you know, he's hit it with a fair amount of power, but you'd still expect a goalkeeper at this level to save that. And, you know, I'm not trying to shit on Jason Steele, because obviously, you know, he's been keeping for as long as he can remember, and I'm not a goalkeeper by any stretch of the imagination, but it just seems to me like it was a little bit of a lapse of concentration, possibly, or just the fact, you know, he's not got the biggest build compared to Verbruggen, who's got much, you know, much bigger wingspan. But yeah, I just don't think you should be getting beaten at that near post. And that first goal, it's a bit of a scuff from Alvarez, and it's probably thrown him off, so you probably could put less blame on him for that. But yeah, I still think the second goal shouldn't really be conceding at all.
The only thing I'd say about that second goal is, I think, you know, it kind of came a little bit out of nowhere, and it's like Haaland took it so early as well. Like, as soon as basically Belaba got the ball, it was probably like a couple of steps, and then bang, he just, like, it was outside the box. He just drove it into that corner. So I don't know. I think it's interesting what you say about kind of Verbruggen and Steele, Louis, because, like, I think I saw some. Did you guys see him like a couple of weeks ago, where Verbruggen was doing an interview saying that, like, he's been told that each keeper's going to get two games at a time? So I don't know, like, whether that's a thing.
Yeah.
I mean, you're obviously saying the home and away. I don't really know. I sort of wonder whether, like, he just really trusts Steele kind of in possession in terms of how he wants kind of De Zerbi ball to play. And he kind of, that's why he's kind of keeping him around a bit longer, maybe waiting until Verbruggen's really up to speed and kind of how he wants his goalkeeper to play. And then probably is his long-term number one. I don't know. But I think it's probably something that needs to be addressed in the next few months, to be honest.
Yeah, is there maybe I'm not saying this is purely speculation and rubbish thinking, but maybe Verbruggen, he is only, what, 21? There's probably an element of going away to City. It is a big occasion regardless. But then again, he does start, you know, for Ajax. Who did we sign from? Yeah, was it Ajax?
Anderlecht.
Who did we get him from now? Anderlecht. God, my brain this morning is absolutely fried. I travelled back yesterday. When we signed him, he was being tipped as being one of the best sort of young players in the world. So I don't quite know where the line's drawn of, you know, he's a talent, he needs to play, and he needs to not play every game because it's not right to just throw him in everything. Mm. There's that fine line, isn't there? And I think De Zerbi, up to now, has got it pretty spot on with everyone in the squad. But perhaps with Verbruggen, you would argue that, yeah, maybe he just needs that little bit more game time, play him for 10 games in a row and just see what happens. And if it doesn't work, then maybe rotate it again. I don't know what you guys think on that.
Yeah, I mean, I would say actually to that extent, you know, about giving him the experience in bigger games. Like, his first start for the Netherlands senior national team was against France. You know, he conceded an absolute worldie to Kylian Mbappe, which I don't think many goalkeepers would have got to. But he's already faced, you know, one of the best players in the world in his first international start. Like, if that's not being thrown in at the deep end, I don't know what is. But, you know, if he can be in that game, and from what I saw online, people that, you know, that were following the game, fans of the Dutch national team, they were all saying that he had a good game. So yeah. I feel like he should be ready. Like, I'm not saying that he has to be ready from game one or whatever, but, you know, you'd expect if we're signing him with this much anticipation, the fact that he did so well playing for Anderlecht last year, you know, he was tipped as one of the best young goalkeepers in Europe, as you said. You know, I feel like he should be up to speed and ready to go. So I don't know why you'd hold him off from playing against City when, if you've got the chance to face up against Erling Haaland and maybe keep a clean sheet against him, why wouldn't you?
And also all I'd say is that... So all I was going to quickly say was just like, De Zerbi's prepared to play like Belaba against City as well, who's literally 19 years old. Mm. So I don't know, it just kind of doesn't really make sense to me why you wouldn't want to put in a young goalkeeper based on experience if you're happy to do it with other players.
Yeah, that's pretty much what I was going to get onto, is the fact that, yeah, we've done it so often with so many other players. We've done it for a good few years, even under Potter, to his credit, did it sort of with Alzate, didn't he, with Connolly, threw them in quite early, risked them quite a lot. Whether it was the right decision for Connolly's aspect, maybe not. But with Alzate, on the other hand, I thought he coped quite well. De Zerbi's done it so regularly here. And yeah, it's a bit of one of those now where you're thinking, as I say, maybe for that next 10-game period, you just give it to Verbruggen for a bit. Just because I think that naturally, as much as I like the diversive thinking, and this is always such a good talking point. I mean, you could probably debate this with Arsenal fans as well, with obviously Raya and Ramsdale, of, you know, it's all well and good doing this, but at some point, you know, there needs to be that consistency at the back. You know, we've obviously had Igor rotating with Van Hecker, rotating with obviously Dunk as well when he came out of the team a couple of times. So, you know, overall, we've makeshifted that defence and that goalkeeping spot so regularly. Now without Solly, now, you know, if Veltman's going to start, if he doesn't, whatever. We've never really had that consistent defence. And obviously, as everybody is, the age-old thing is, you need a good defence to win everything that you want to win. So, I don't know. I think that there's definitely a case for starting him for a little bit longer. But yeah, I don't know. We'll see. We'll move on to the second half. Because I thought after the, you know, obviously, Milner comes off. I thought we actually played quite well. Veltman comes on. We've got a proper right back on the pitch. And I don't know, we had a very good second half. I don't know about you, Adam, but there's definitely a case to say, with the amount of chances we had, I mean, obviously, you had the Mitoma one a bit later on, a Mitoma header as well. We had quite a few corners and free kicks, not to mention the Anzu goal. I think that they were definitely there for the taking.
100%. And I think at full time, that was like, you could sense that a little bit towards the end, like the City fans whistling, the crowd whistling to the ref. And obviously with that sending off as well, making it a little bit more hairy. I think, yeah, completely. I think my view is, I think probably City deserve to win it. I think based on that first half, like they did just show that golfing class that they had. But like you say, like there was that gross chance as well, which I think he put into the side netting as well. And I think the substitutions really changed the game. Veltman was obviously able to cope with the threat that kind of eventually came with Grealish. And like he's been, you know, he's done really well against Grealish in the past, particularly as well. Andy Fatty, I thought, was really dynamic. A player who I think we've all been a little bit not sure of, but was really impressive going forward. Mitoma, multiple times, kind of weaving through the kind of middle and over to the left, really just taking it to the Man City players. And there was a moment in the second half where I was just looking at De Zerbi, him going mental after. I think we might have even still been 2-0 down. And, you know, it's typical kind of Brighton, the way we play, that we're not just going to shut up shop. We're not going to kind of, you know, get demoralised. We were still playing. We were still taking it to them. And yeah, probably in the end, if we had scored, it wouldn't have been the most unfair thing in the world. But I think in my view, probably on balance, it was a fair result in the end. Ryan, you're on mute.
You're muted, Ryan.
Do you think we had enough chances to come back into it? Sorry, I was doing a Louis there.
Is that to me? I mean, I think a problem.
Is that it? Yeah, it was at Louis. Don't worry. But no, I think I've got a bit of a delay here because every single time I say something, I seem to get left behind. But yeah, I was asking Louis if he thinks we had enough chances to win the game, because I don't know. I thought, I agree with you to a degree. I thought Mitoma, as you say, was very good coming forward. I thought we had quite a lot of chances. Perhaps maybe not the clear-cut expected goals is going to love you sort of chances, but I definitely think, though, you know, for a Brighton side going away, I would have said that a 2-2, I don't know about you, Lou, but was on the cards for me. I don't know, I could be in delusional world.
No, I reckon you're right there, to be honest. Like, I think the way that we played, especially in that second half, like, I know obviously Mitoma in that first half, he really took it to Kyle Walker, which is not something that many players have done or can do, which I think is a really unique skill set of his. But yeah, I think that second half, we created so much. We, like you said, we're never that sort of team that are just going to sit off and let the game wilt away or try and do damage limitation or whatever like that. It's not the deserving way. So I think he'd rather lose like 5-1 like we did to Newcastle last year than, you know, take a, like a 2-0 loss. Because at that point, you know, you feel like you've actually got no more to lose. So you might as well take it to them. And I think that fearlessness, that tenacity, the way that we played in that second half, it was like they must have got some sort of bollocking at half time. Because, yeah, the way they came out, suddenly it was a whole different game. And I feel like with all the opportunities that were created, I think I agree with you that 2-2 would have been a very fair result. I think it was just that final, like, cutting edge, maybe, as people were getting tired, that maybe just stopped us from getting that equaliser.
Yeah, I do agree. I look back on that first half as well. Obviously, Lewis Dunk, I thought, is worth mentioning, had a great game, a very, very good game, because he's essentially covered that right-back spot as well. I feel like every time that if it was Gross, whether it was a Dinga, whether it was Milner, got done in that first half, Dunk was across and cleared a lot of balls out. Also, a couple of chests back to the keeper, which he does so well, as everybody knows.
Yeah.
Absolutely love those. But I thought Dunk was fantastic. And going into that second half, I think if it wasn't for him, we could have been down about 4 or 5. And again, it comes down to the same old thing of the Zerbi's football. As you say, Louis, second half coming out so strong. But this is a question to you, Adam. Why do we need to concede 2 goals in pretty sloppy fashion to start playing how we know we can play? Because then all of a sudden we're on par with City and we're playing some of the best stuff in the league again.
I mean, I don't really know. I think it would have been pretty mad if we'd been able to come out at the Etihad from minute one and like just knock the ball about the way Brighton do. Maybe, I don't know, just the kind of momentum of football, the way the game swings kind of every kind of week for every team, like you almost need to go 2 goals down or you need to go a goal down to kind of for the opposition to kind of maybe sit back or kind of take a bit better pressure. But I don't know. I think there's definitely a conversation to be had. I said it post game on Seagull Central about how, you know, we need to address this issue about leaking goals. Like, I think it's getting to a point now where it is just mental. Like, everyone in the kind of wider footballing sphere is picking up on it as well. Like, we're conceding a lot of goals, and yes, it's City, but like, I think, I don't know, it's quite irritating that we often have to kind of go a couple of goals down to then play, or you know that if we're going to win a game, we're probably going to need to score 3 goals to win it. And I don't know, that's something that's worrying me a little bit. But back to Lewis Dunk.
It's more the nature of the
goals. Yeah, completely.
Isn't it? Just on your point, it's more the nature of the goals that's frustrating. It's not so much, yeah, we've conceded to City, because don't get me wrong, teams lose 4 or 5 to City weekly. But these are a bit of a different City at the moment. They've lost Rodri, he comes back, and you expect them to be stronger with him. But I don't know, the way we conceded is what's bugging me, because I think that's why I'm almost on the fence of saying we should have, you know, done better in that game results basis, because, you know, second half we come out and we looked as good as. And I think that's what's frustrating. You've had to go them 2 stupid goals down, a bit like how we did at Villa, a bit like how we did at Marseille, a bit like how we did even with Liverpool. I mean, that's now 4 games in a row where we've had to concede in a bad way. Louis, I don't know if you agree with that, and we'll go on to your point on Dunk in a minute. Sorry, Adam.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think that those sort of early goals that we concede, that might just be, I don't know if you call it rust, but it's like, you know, when you sort of go out and you're still, maybe your head's still a bit in the dressing room, it's so early and teams are looking to put pressure on us super early because they know that we're not fully like awake or whatever it is, ready to go. So they'll look to pounce on that opportunity really early doors and try and take us on. And I think the midfield personnel as well is going to be a big reason for that. You know, last year when we had Caicedo and McAllister sat in front of that back four, people wouldn't even dare to take us on. And you saw how much more, you know, structurally rigid we were when we had those two in that midfield pivot. But I think now, you know, we're persisting with Gross in a midfield two as a pivot. It just doesn't work. Like, I get that we need someone else to be in that role that we lost two of our key players, and obviously it's going to be a huge void to fill. And I think Baleba is getting there. He's going to be that Caicedo replacement. But we still need someone else that's going to partner him in that midfield. And I think we can't really persist with Gross, because defensively, we know he's not sound. Like, we know how good he is going forward, but there's no point putting him in that more defensive role because it doesn't get anything out of him and it doesn't really benefit us at all. So it puts more emphasis, I think, on the defenders to start doing more. And like you say about Dunk, I think that's probably one of the best games he's had in an Albion shirt. He was unbelievable yesterday. And I think if it weren't for him, we probably would have been 5 or 6 down. And the way he set up our goal, like, you know, he clears that off the line and then plays that fizzing pass across the pitch, which eventually leads to the goal. Like, he's just showing his quality week in, week out. Even if he drops, like, that's the thing with Dunk now. It's come to the point where if he doesn't drop like a 7 or 8 out of 10 performance, people start saying, oh, he's washed, he's finished, whatever, he's overrated, you know. But when we see him play these games, we've just become so used to him putting in such solid, really good performances that as soon as he has one that's slightly off the mark, you know, people start getting on his back. But we all know, as Brighton fans, just how good he is. And like yesterday, against arguably the best team in the world, he showed just like his incredible qualities. Like, for me, this might be a bit of a bold shout. I don't know. This might end up going viral on social media or whatever. But I don't care at this point. I'm putting him, genuinely, at the stage he's in, with the form he's in, I'm putting him as one of the top 5 centre-backs in the Prem.
Well, I think that's bully.
At
that's
this fair. Current stage.
At that's fair at the moment.
With all the qualities he possesses, with all the qualities he possesses, I don't see any reason why you could argue against that, to be honest.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Yeah, no, that's fair enough. I mean, Adam, you had a point on Dunk, actually, and on Louis' point as well. As I say, he's been so good. Is it almost, he's gone to England and he seems to have gone up another level, hasn't he? I don't know if that's maybe just me thinking about it, but he seems to have come back even more mature and even stronger than he ever was.
That point is definitely true. I think, I remember when he got his first call-up, was it maybe 2018 or something? And he didn't obviously get a call-up again for years. And I remember reading a piece, I think, in The Athletic, and they were saying that it was because his level of... Gareth Southgate essentially wasn't that impressed with his level of training compared to kind of the other elite players that were in the England squad. And I think it's quite interesting now. He's clearly just a few years on. We all thought he was amazing back in 2018. He's taken that game to that really elite Premier League level now. Brighton are, I think, an elite kind of side within the Premier League, playing some of the best football. And he's obviously gone to that England camp and realised that he is one of the best defenders there. He's a quality player within that team. And he's playing with that kind of arrogance of a player who knows he's absolutely quality. And in his later years now, much more mature, can read the game a lot better. And what I was going to say was essentially what Louis said about, you know, with the goal, you know, it was an amazing block on the line, or, you know, chesting it on the line or whatever. But loads of players then would have just like lumped it up. They're under pressure. Dunk picks out a perfect ball into midfield, fizzes it into, I can't remember who, let's say Matoma or someone. And suddenly the attack gets going again. And I think he's got so many kind of strings to his bow, you know, defensively, blocks, awareness, being able to read the game, you know, technically being able to play the ball as well. I think I completely agree with you. I think he's one of the top centre-halves in the league, 100%.
Yeah, and I might even do you one better, to be fair, because I feel like he's been there for a while. I think I remember saying this in the 2021 season and really going on about it for the Euros, really going on about it, saying I really thought that was his moment. I thought his Lewis Dunk 2021 was very, very strong. And I feel like in 2023, 2 years later, if you're judging it on FIFA, he should be getting worse. But if you're judging it in real life, it's really quite the opposite. Yes, I do agree with you. I think he's been fantastic. And yesterday, as you say, probably one of his best games. And it was more to the fact he was just covering for them two positions, which was so impressive. He's done it so often before anyway.
But because he's had to account, obviously, there. And then, obviously, we'll get onto this now, but Solly's injury, it looked nasty. I couldn't work out if it was a knee or if it was an ankle. Certainly, his leg sort of bent inwards, which is never a good sign. I think he was in tears as well as he came off the pitch. And a lot of rumours that Roberto De Zerbi went straight down the tunnel. Quite to my frustration at first, until I realised he went down apparently to Solly March and check on him straight away, which is apparently a very nice thing. I don't know if that's true, probably is. Solly, what a shame that is. I mean, seriously, what a shame that is. It sounded very sarcastic. He's been so good for us for such a long time now. He's been on our right side, on our left side, and now sort of playing left back as cover for us through Pignan, and still putting in such good performances against top sides. And it's just, I don't know what's going to happen to him. Hopefully it's not as bad as first feared, although in my unfortunate opinion, it's probably going to be a long one. And we've already discussed the issues going forward, but Solly himself, Louis, it's a massive shame, isn't it, to put it lightly?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I've always been a big fan of Solly's. Like, he's been Mr. Consistent, I think, for so many years. Like, he's never been one of those players that, you know, if he gets played out of position, he's going to throw a hissy fit and refuse to play or whatever. You know, he's always got his head down and works and trained harder, played in whatever position, whichever manager it is, has requested him to play in. You know, he's played pretty much along both wings for, you know, every single manager that he's played for. You know, he's played as a wing back, he's played as a winger. I think he even played as a bit of a centre forward back when we were in the Championship for a few games. Like, he's just been everywhere across the pitch, and he's so versatile, and he's been able to adapt and adjust over these, you know, last 10 years that he's been with us, like playing solidly in the first team. It's been amazing to watch. And then, as you say, like having to cover for Estupiñán, it's a big pair of boots to fill. Like, Estupiñán's one of the best in the league at left back. To have to step into that position against arguably the best club team in the world, it's a huge ask. And the fact that, you know, he took to the job so well, and he kept, you know, kept Phil Foden so quiet. We were talking about Foden's qualities earlier, like just how good of a player he is. And he brings something very unique to the game, something that, like you say, Bellingham doesn't quite do. But, he kept Foden so quiet throughout that first half, and actually through the second half as well. But then to have him having that injury is just heartbreaking, because, you know, he's worked so hard, and he's, like you say, he's come so far with us, to then have that setback again after what happened at the end of last season. It's really, really tough. And, you know, hopefully it's not a huge setback, like, in terms of how long he's going to be out for. But it's just adding to that injury crisis, especially in that fullback position.
Yeah. Adam, any words on Solly?
Well, firstly, kind of best of luck with the recovery. I think, to me, and everything I've seen, I think it just looks like an ACL, to be honest. I think it looks like it's knee, and it just, I don't know, I think it's probably going to be like 9, 12 months. And you've seen what happened to Jakob Mölder as well with that injury as well. So it's just horrible to have another player getting that injury, because who knows what we might next see him. I think, just touching on what you guys said, I think it's been so good to see him be able to do that job at left back so easily. Of course, he did it under Potter, and he was playing that left wing back role. And, you know, it was nice when De Zerbi came in that he got kind of reinstated to right wing again, given the number 7 shirt, and kind of really given that faith to kind of go and kind of try and be a top winger in this league. And he was getting to a stage where, you know, he probably wasn't quite at the England call-up kind of level, but he was certainly in the conversation, like probably behind like someone like Bowen in that kind of conversation. So, you know, it is really sad to see. And I'll be honest, you know, let's say what, 10 years ago, maybe a bit less than that. Like, I was probably a bit of a Solly March critic when we were in the Championship and when he was coming through.
Probably 2 years ago, I was a Solly March
critic. I just thought he was very, very one-footed and often didn't have that confidence to like go and take players on, you know, in the same way that we see kind of now Matoma's comfortable with doing. And I often wanted him to kind of have a bit more to his game. But I think in these last few years, probably really since Potter's left, actually, mainly the last year or so, he's really taken that game to the other level. He's been given that license to just go and attack and take players on, how does Erby likes play. And he's just given them that confidence. I think it's so sad to see. And you think as well, he's, what, 28 now maybe? You know, probably, you know, it's good that he could play that left-back role, because as he goes into his 30, he's, you know, he probably could have done a job for us at left-back going forwards, or, you know, for the rest of his career, maybe ended up playing at left-back. And such a versatile player, such a quality player at a really good point in his career at the moment. So it would be a real stinger if he was to be out for, let's say, a year.
Yeah. It's always that worry, isn't it, at this age, isn't it? Because you're sort of just going past your prime era, then you're going towards that sort of, yeah, then 30s. And obviously, if you get an ACL injury and you're going into your 30s, it's never a good sign. And yeah, we can only hope, really, that Solly's injury doesn't stop him from playing at the top level, because so often you can see that at this sort of stage in his career where, you know, sometimes it can keep you up for a long time and you never really recover from it. But hopefully that's not the case. And as you mentioned, actually, the 10 years thing of Solly is insane. I was only saying this to my family yesterday. It's really weird how he's been here for so long, because we still sort of look at him as being our little star boy coming up through the academy. And when he scored against Norwich in a friendly, we thought, oh my God, we've got a proper player on our hands. And now it's yeah, he's been here for 10 years. He's established himself in the squad, to which he's had a lot of criticism, including from myself. And I've always, as I said, as you said as well, Adam, that one-footed thing, not scoring enough goals, not getting enough assists. And, you know, to be a winger in the top level, you have to have goals and assists, as much as it's annoying. And he added that to his game and did it very, very well under the De Zerbi. So it's such a shame it's come at this time. And especially for the Brighton's sake, and you know, and the fact we haven't actually got a fit left back anymore. So going into that Ajax game is going to be very tough. But if I was to just lighten the mood slightly, obviously we do wish Solly all the best in his recovery. And hopefully, yeah, this isn't as deep, as bad as we think it's going to be. But we never know, unfortunately, with the injury crisis in this club historically. Ansu Fati, as you mentioned, that goal was a good goal, but more to the fact, I actually thought he was really good when he came on. And actually, for the probably the second time, I'd say, I really saw Ansu's quality. You know, we were yet to really see it, are we? That star quality that we know he's had at Barcelona for such a long time. But I don't know about you, Louis, but he's almost, I wouldn't say he's anywhere near there yet, but we're starting to see the extra 10% every single week he comes off from the bench.
I think so. I think it's just a case of, you know, you're getting settled in a completely new environment. You know, he's been playing at Barcelona where they're almost expected to win the league title, but he has so many quality players around him, like genuine world-class players, that he can just relax a bit more and be himself. And I'm not saying that our team is, you know, massively far off the quality that Barcelona possess, but, you know, when you come into this brand new environment, it's a different situation that you're playing in. I know Xavi's tactics are very much, you know, you work around, you play the ball a lot. It's very much the classic Barca style, which would suit, you know, I think it would suit Ansu Fati for sure. But, you know, you're coming into an environment with players with different qualities that you're having to adjust to. And that's not something that, you know, anyone can just immediately do from day one, unless you are one of the best in the world. So I think, you know, we got to give him that leeway, I think, essentially. But when he plays with confidence, I think this is something I saw on a few videos, like compilations of when you see Ansu Fati playing with confidence, he looks unbelievable. And we saw that when he was at Barcelona. And there's a reason that he was given the number 10 shirt at Barca. You know, he's got so much quality, he's got so much talent and so much potential that as long as we give him the time, and, you know, as long as, you know, he's allowed to have that freedom, I think the freedom is the main thing. And working off another striker, someone who's an actual number nine, who's happy to just work off him, you know, play with him. I think when he plays alongside Pedro, like if Pedro's ahead of him or he's ahead of Pedro, it doesn't quite work because they're actually quite similar kinds of players. I prefer him through the middle for sure. But when he's got a Ferguson ahead of him or a Welbeck, like that, the first half against Marseille, the way he worked with Welbeck, and granted, Welbeck didn't have the best game there either, but, you know, when he worked off Welbeck in that first half, it worked so, so well. And again, it was that issue with going down two goals early, but he was electric in that match. And he was one of our best players, I think, against Marseille. And like I said, when he came on against City yesterday, it was so much more energy. You know, he looked like he had a little bit more freedom going into that game. And this is against a really, really good team. You know, if he carries on playing with that level of confidence, who knows what we'll see out of him.
Yeah. Adam, I'm not so much putting him on the pressure of being like he was when he was, you know, obviously one of the best regarded talents in the world. But, I mean, to see even 60% of that, what we saw for his Barca career, is going to probably be one of the best we've ever seen here. which goes to show the sort of quality that he has, which De Zerbi's gone on about it so much. You know, and I do agree with him. You know, these players need time. You know, you can't just put Ansu Fati in and expect him to play as Ansu Fati did. You know, he's had that big injury. He's obviously had his setbacks as well, and not coming back into the team as quickly as maybe he'd hoped to. And even some reports coming out from Barcelona in since the summer saying that they'd be happy to sell him at the end of this season, you know, if he plays well here. And then much to the links that followed it of them wanting Mitoma. So I could probably see where that one's going. But we won't talk about that bit yet. But Ansu Fati, Adam, he's starting to show it, isn't he? I mean, I thought yesterday was probably the brightest spark and has a genuine case to say I should be starting against Ajax.
I think he was an element as to why our game changed in the second half. As I said before, him and Veltman, I think, were really fundamental in that. I think, you know, you wouldn't... If he was playing at the level he could play at, you know, and he was coming straight into Brighton, playing at the level he could play, he probably wouldn't be at Brighton. So I think we kind of had to expect that he was going to come and maybe be a little bit rusty, be a bit tentative in the way he's playing. Obviously, coming back from an injury, maybe trying to get used to things a little bit, getting used to a new league, a new manager, a manager who, you know, notoriously kind of demands a lot from his players. And you have to almost learn a whole new system of football. As Levi Cole said, you have to understand football in a completely different way under De Zerbi. So it's you know, him coming in immediately, particularly when you're playing up front and it's difficult and you've got to try and link with players. It's hard. It's not as simple as that. And, you know, coming on kind of as a sub at Villa, I can't remember, or, you know, wherever. It's a tough gig at times. I think we're definitely seeing the best of it. I think yesterday was probably the kind of most encouraged I've seen in terms of seeing it. And I think going into so let's say Thursday night, I think for me, him and Ferguson as a kind of 10 and number 9, I think that's long term something I really like. Obviously Pedro is quality and I think there's definitely place for him as well, but I agree with your point, Louis, that they can't both play together. I think you need to have one or the other because they're too similar.
Yeah, no, I do agree with you. I also sort of echo your points really on Ansu. I think he showed me a lot, I think. Last couple of games, he's really given me a lot more confidence. I think I put a tweet out actually during that Marseille game saying, you know, Ansu Fati is clearly, clearly quality. I think it was that header he had that really, like, he forced that world-class save. And I thought, okay, right, not many players can just header a ball like that at about 5'6". And I'm joking, I don't actually know how tall he is. But he seems quite short. very rich coming from me, I'm very sorry. But yeah, he...
he's taller than you.
5'8", mate, come on. But yeah, I thought, after that, I thought, yeah, you can definitely see his class. He had a couple of touches, didn't he? I think it was against Athens. You can just see them little bits of quality, and I want to see it more, and I think we are starting to see it more without putting too much pressure on the kid, because you do forget he's only 20 years old with the amount he's achieved at such a young age. Just on your point on João Pedro, it wasn't the best yesterday. Obviously I like João Pedro a lot. Probably didn't have his best game and he'd admit it. What do you think we need from Pedro? Because we had this discussion with Ben and Maz. His goal return isn't the best, but he's very good on the spot. His link-up play is getting better. Obviously, he was the captain at Watford as well. So he's had a very good career up until only 21, which is quite mad. You know, he captained his side when he came over to England, which is a huge achievement. I don't know what you think, Louis, where he gets his goals from, or if he should be just maybe playing in that deeper role. Where do you see João Pedro as the best João Pedro and where we can really see him flourish?
See, I personally think we've got so much, we're so now stacked in those attacking areas, like through the middle, out towards the left, maybe not so much on the right. Maybe there's a space for him on the right, but I don't really know if that really suits his game particularly. I know he likes to take people on one-on-one, but I don't know. I'm not sure that's quite where he would thrive. I feel like he has a potential to just be an out-and-out nine, because we've seen, you know, some of his finishing has been a little bit questionable. But when he's in that pressure situation, like taking those penalties, he is ice cold.
Yeah.
Absolutely ice cold. And if he can just refine his finishing ever so slightly, give him the freedom to be that nine who just attacks the spaces and gets those clinical finishes in, you know, that's going to be huge for us going forward. If we've got the rotation of being able to have Ferguson and João Pedro as those reliable number nines who can get you goals at any time in any situation. I think that would be huge for us. And if we do end up signing Enzo Fati on a permanent, I'm not sure I can see it happening unless we get some sort of deal with Barcelona for Mitoma. It might be possible. And that even might give Ansu Fati the freedom to be starting on the left, and then maybe João Pedro can then retake that number 10 spot. Who knows? There's all sorts of things to take into consideration here, but I don't know. Yeah. I feel like Pedro has the potential to be an out-and-out number 9, but there's been a few times I've seen him attempt to finish, and it's been, I can't remember which game it was that he scuffed on over the bar from very close.
Yeah,
it was tough.
I agree. Pedro's an interesting player. I like him a lot. I think his work rate's very, very good for a sort of a forward player. He comes back very deep. I think it was against the game before the break, which was Liverpool, and he sort of tracked back a good 60 yards, didn't he? And he really closed down his man. I think it was Szoboszlai or someone like that. And I think he literally travelled the length of the pitch just to put a challenge in. And I think those sort of things he's so good at. He's got really, really good characteristics of a potential midfielder, an attacking midfielder. My question is, whether he's got that ability to start finishing them chances. Maybe if he starts them, them running in behind a couple more times than he is already, then perhaps we could see a little bit better. But I don't know. We'll see. I think what's good to take away from not only this podcast, but watching Brighton in general is it's all just a work in progress. It's just literally a work in progress. We're talking about a 21-year-old João Pedro. We're talking about a 20-year-old Ansu Fati. Then we've obviously got the Lewis Dunk, who is now 32, but only just going out to England and getting his new experience. And it's such a work in progress of a squad that it's really hard to just start judging. I mean, Mitoma's might be 26, but it's only his second year for us in the top flight of English football. So it's a mad thing, really, isn't it? I don't know if you've got any other final words, Adam, on the work in progress that is Brighton and Roberto De Zerbi as well. Actually, is worth noting.
Completely, we've brought in a lot of players in the summer. We've lost a couple of really crucial players, so I think it was always going to be a massive challenge going into this season without like Caicedo and McAllister, for example. So I think there has to be a level of expectation when we're playing so many more games. We're in European football. We were fighting in kind of four competitions at the start of the season. It was always going to be a lot more difficult. And I think it takes time for players to adapt. We're literally having to revamp a whole midfield. We can't expect Baleva to be Caicedo literally every night. We can't expect Andy Fatty to be a world beater every night. João Pedro is coming up from a literally different league to come into European football. So I think there's definitely a work in progress here. And I think I'm quite encouraged by the fact that I do genuinely think De Zerbi is here, not for the long term, but I think he'll be here beyond the summer. I think he'll be here this time next year. And I think there is a bit more of a long-term kind of vision with this team. And I think we're in a really, really good place. Just because we're in a spell where we're conceding quite a lot of goals and we're playing some difficult teams at the moment, it doesn't mean everything's awful. I think we're actually pretty good, Nick. Barring injuries, we've got Enciso to come back in the next few weeks. We saw him speak yesterday on the TikTok live saying he's going to be back in December. Yeah. So there are things to be positive about. And it's a massively exciting season. So, yeah.
Yeah. I know, I do agree with you. I think we're almost victims of our own success, aren't we, really, where we sell all these players for a large amount of money. It instantly puts pressure on the new replacements, another young player at Brighton. He must be the next world beater. And then when he isn't, he doesn't have a good game, he's being called out on Twitter. We've never been quite in that situation before, of extreme sort of social media clout and sort of extreme views towards all of our players. It's always been that we've been the irrelevant teams like Brighton. It's really changed in that last year that now we're the development club. But I think if you were to understand the game and watch Brighton and watch everything about this squad, it's clearly not ready. It's clearly not ready for just for Mitoma to leave, just for Ansu Fati to go back to Barca, just for De Zerbi to go take over at City. All three of those things won't work. And I think if people can't see that, then they don't understand football. And that's just my opinion. Because Brighton are very, very, very much a work in progress. A lot of these players can't just leave and improve. You saw Robert Sanchez yesterday. Great assist for Declan Rice. Because it isn't just like you can just go and be better because you aren't. Sorry, BHA Harvey, I had to call you out there, son. anyway, that's about it from us, I think. Unless there's any other talking points which I've missed, I could have done, but I don't think I have.
I mean, what? I mean,
don't think so, but I'd like to just say, you know.
Go on.
Yeah. No, I was just thinking, like, if you think about how I don't actually think we've really got our second gear this year. Like, we haven't been playing well in a lot of the games. And despite that, we're still getting some unbelievable results. So if we're playing at this level right now, when we're not even doing that well, just imagine how good we're going to be when we start taking it up a notch.
Yeah,
like, we will be one of the best teams in the league, because when we are on song, we look unbeatable, genuinely unbeatable.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. It's a good way to end it as well. Billy Gilmore, I need him back in that 11, if I'm honest with you. I need to see him alongside Carlos Baleba. I want to see that duo, because I think it's a potentially a very good one. But yeah, thank you boys for joining me. I think we'll just finish on, obviously, the sad news. I don't want to just bring the mood down again, but obviously Sir Bobby Charlton, I know it's not Brighton related, but did sadly pass away, aged 86, wasn't he? Absolute icon for the game. I think it would be wrong to do a podcast and not give tribute to an icon for the sport, and just someone that's, yeah, revolutionised the game, obviously, in the Munich disaster as well for Manchester United. It's an incredible story that he had, and the way it's sort of impacted the footballing world since, I think it was about halftime yesterday, which was mad. But yeah, Full respect to him and his family and everybody involved as well with them, all his football clubs, etc. Sorry about Charlton. What a man he was. Anyway, on that note, make sure you like, comment, subscribe, all that good stuff. And also comments below. Probably do something Bobby Charlton related now. You sort of probably got to him. Yeah. So anything you want. Put a blue heart in the chat, and also I want to hear some thoughts as well on any of the talking points that you've picked up from the pod today. But yeah, thank you boys for joining me. We'll see you probably just before Ajax. Hopefully Ben and Maz will be on this podcast, but no guarantees. Until then, we'll see you very soon, and yeah, goodbye.
Days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.